Back to school, prove to dad I'm not a fool. Lyrics, of course, from the movie Billy Madison, applying to me here in the workshop. We're going back to school. Let's take a closer look.
Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
As Mr. Burns from The Simpsons would say, no hoy hoy, or hello there to all listeners, subscribers, premium members of the Council of Trent podcast. Welcome. It is Workshop Wednesday, the day where you get to sit in on my workshop, my office here at Catholic Answers, to find out just what I'm doing during my 9 to 5 to learn, study, grow, and create more materials to help you explain and defend the Catholic faith. My name is, of course, Trent Horn, apologist and speaker here at Catholic Answers, and this is another episode of the Council of Trent podcast. So what's going on today here in the workshop? What am I working on? Well, I'm taking a breather for a little bit. I've just been trying to gather myself back together over 2 really busy weeks. First, I had a gala presentation and the debate with Dan Barker up at the Minnesota State University in Mankato, which you've probably heard. I did recent podcast, my reflections on that debate, which I thought went very well. I've heard a lot of positive response from people, really across the spectrum looking at it. So that's been great to hear, but it was definitely a lot of work and a few things got pushed to the back burner in my preparation for the debate. And as soon as the debate was done, I flew back down here to San Diego, went right back into the Catholic Answers office, right back to work really quickly, visiting my in-laws who were in town, and then getting everything together for our annual conference on faith. And this year it's on faith and science here in San Diego at Catholic Answers. So in La Jolla, we did our conference, and it was great. We had amazing guest speakers, Dr. Stacy Trisankos, Father Terrence Ehrman, and His Eminence Cardinal Burke gave a wonderful talk on the church's teaching on contraception and the legacy it has left since Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humana Vitae. And the conference, I was busy as can be. I got to meet a few subscribers. If you were a subscriber and you came up to say hi, a premium member of the Council of Trent podcast, I'm very appreciative that you were there, and I really enjoyed your support. I gave my talk on free will, on the brain, the mind, gender, the human person. What exactly are we, and does science undermine traditional Christian views of the human person? That talk has already been recorded. It should be up online for purchase here in the next few weeks or so if you are interested in seeing that. Hopefully I can get an advance copy for our premium subscribers to the Council of Trent podcast, and I'll make that available to you guys as soon as I can. And by the way, later this week, I will probably be making some comments on the controversy surrounding Brett Kavanaugh and his nomination to the Supreme Court. What does that mean for us as Catholics, for especially important issues like abortion that will reach the Supreme Court? My thoughts on that will be broadcast later in the week to our premium subscribers. And once again, a big thanks to our premium subscribers that are keeping the show going, allowing it to grow. We're about to cross our critical threshold here so that we can start having video. We've been recording different episodes, putting that together, but we still need a little bit more support that we can bring on someone else who can, you know, record, edit, and get what we're doing here on the podcast out to YouTube so we can send it out to even more people. And if you want to be a subscriber to support that and to get these bonus episodes and bonus content available nowhere else, definitely check out TrentHornPodcast.com. Even subscribing at $5 or $10 a month allows you access to this wonderful, great content. So check that out. Go to TrentHornPodcast.com and click on Become a Patron. So as I said, things have been super busy trying to wind everything down. So now that I'm here in the office, I'm catching up on school of all things. And this is very important because as I grow in different skill sets in order to do apologetics, it's very, very helpful. Catholic Answers supports me in doing this so that I can become, develop more of an expertise, well-rounded research in lots of different areas. So this is actually my 3rd master's degree that I'm working on right now. I guess maybe I'm a little bit addicted to school. My wife always says to me, why don't you just get your PhD already? Because I told her, well, one, I don't want to uproot my entire family across the country somewhere to get a PhD. They don't quite offer PhDs through distance learning programs. Not many. There are some. There is one at the University of Maryvale I'm very interested in. It's a PhD in Catholic Studies, but it would still require 2 weeks of travel every year to do on-campus work at the University of Maryvale in England. So I would be heading off to jolly old England. I'm sure my Some of my friends, including one Mr. David Bates I know, would take me to task for my horrendous British accent. And of course, there's not just one British accent. There's all kinds of different ones. So there's your traditional British accent, and there's kind of more of the Liverpool accent, you know, like the Beatles. You know, we say we're bigger than Jesus. It's not exactly what we meant. So I find that one to be, you know, kind of a hipper accent, the Liverpool one. And then there's Cockney. There's the Cockney accent. Like Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins. Did you know that he had to apologize for that accent because it was so terrible what he was doing? So yeah, so we'll see if I go down that PhD route. But for now, I'm doing the master's degree in bioethics at the University of Mary. If you are interested in learning more about bioethics, by the way, I highly recommend this program. I've really enjoyed it. And you actually start the program, you can get 12 credits for the University of Mary bioethics program through the National Catholic Bioethics Center. You take classes through there. It's all distance learning except for some on-site seminars you go to at the beginning and end of the program. It's a 9-month program. You can get 12 graduate credits. You get your work reviewed by people like Father Tad Poholchek, for example, who has a great column called Making Sense of Bioethics. I really enjoyed that part of the program. And then the other 24 credits in your master's degree can be obtained online, except for a few on-campus weekends at the University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota. And you cover history of bioethics, medicine, law, theology, faith and reason. So I'm going through that now, and I've been writing up a few things actually and incorporating this into my own work here at Catholic Answers to deal with these moral dilemmas, because people call us on the radio or they send us emails with questions about moral dilemmas in bioethics. And what's interesting here is that we're not talking about just the basic questions here, like, is abortion wrong? I mean, that's one, you know, right off the top of your head, if you're a faithful Catholic or a person who is committed to the use of reason would say, well, yeah, you can't kill human beings in the womb just because they're smaller or less developed than you are. But other questions in bioethics kind of get, they get a bit trickier. And what's interesting in the history of bioethics, the term bioethics, and I was shocked to find this out in my studies, it wasn't coined until the 1960s and the 1970s. It wasn't coined until the latter part of the 20th century. There wasn't a field. I mean, ethics has been around forever. It's been around since, you know, Aristotle back in ancient Greece, the Nicomachean Ethics. But bioethics has not. And a lot of people still aren't familiar with that term. I remember once I was on an airplane and I was doing my research and studies, and a woman asked me, oh, you know, what are you writing about? And I said, oh, well, I write about bioethics. And she gave me like a weird look. And I said, is everything all right? She said, oh, you just seem to be young to be working on something like anthrax. I said, no. I don't do bioweapons or biological weapons like anthrax or something like that. No, I said bioethics is the study of ethics, you know, right and wrong, morally good, morally evil. What are the right and wrong ways we should treat human life? Bio, of course, meaning life. Ethics meaning, you know, study of right and wrong. How should we treat human beings, in particular on questions related to human life, like creating human life, modifying human life in the womb, doing genetic experimentation, ending human life, withdrawing medical treatment at the end of life. So bioethics as a term hasn't really been around since the latter part of the 20th century, and it really rose to prominence after World War II, because people saw doctors, people like Dr. Joseph Mengele, the angel of death, one of the wicked Nazi doctors who were doing these horrifying experiments on prisoners in concentration camps. They would inject them with different substances. What's sad, actually, is some of the technology we have, like treatments for hypothermia, were actually developed by the Nazis. They would take prisoners in concentration camps and put them in ice-cold baths and see how long they would last and try to figure out ways to rewarm them. And so now there's this dilemma, you know, in medicine, we have this knowledge that was obtained through these evil experiments, but the knowledge itself is good. It does save lives if somebody falls into a lake or something and is taken to a hospital. Do we just throw away that knowledge because it came from evil means? Or do we accept that the evil in the past is done and we try to do as much good as we can with the knowledge that came from that? So that's just one of the dilemmas that arises. And so in the latter part of the 20th century, people saw, hey, wait a minute, We have to have ethics applied to medical research, applied to the practice of medicine. That even in the early 20th century, you had issues like informed consent. That doctors, you know, would, the standard is a doctor would reveal to a patient whatever he thought was appropriate for the patient to know. And if a doctor didn't think it was appropriate, you know, why bother telling the patient? He knows what's best for the patient. And then there were some famous cases where patients were injured because the doctor failed to reveal a fact that would have caused the patient to not take part in the surgery. Now, obviously, a doctor cannot reveal every single fact or every single detail about a surgery or a procedure. I mean, he can't turn you into a doctor before he acts as a doctor on you. He can't tell you every single fact and detail about it. But surely, and this is what has been learned in bioethics as principles like informed consent have been developed, that the doctor should tell you things that are relevant to you, that if you knew about X, detail X, and that would make you not do the surgery, not do the procedure, then he has an obligation to tell you that. So what I'm doing right now is going through different case studies in this program. And this is a good way to actually learn about bioethics. You read about a particular case, you organize the data that's involved. You know, what are the medical facts? What are the preferences of the parties that are involved? What would be the Catholic context involved in this? How does the Catholic Church look at this issue? The Catholic Church doesn't have firm, definitive teachings on some bioethical issues. Others have been going on for a very long time. Interestingly enough, I was reading in the textbook for the class called a book called The Birth of Bioethics by Johnson, is his last name. And he said that bioethics has a robust history within Catholicism more so than other Christian denominations like Protestants. And one reason for that is that Catholics have had to deal with bioethical questions for centuries, specifically in the confessional. These are questions not just, you know, to creating or ending life, but also questions dealing with sexual ethics, like what sexual behaviors are okay or not okay. And even priests, you know, back in the 19th, 18th, 17th centuries have had to deal with this. St. Alphonsus Liguori, for example, one of the church's greatest moral theologians, talks about this in his works. And you start reading them, it gets into some pretty nitty-gritty questions about sexual morality. So bioethics has a rich history within Catholicism because as Catholics, look, we've had these questions brought to priests in confessional, and sometimes they say, well, I don't know exactly how to respond to this. Is it a sin? Is it not a sin? They go back to their superiors. They go back to bishops and other learned members among theologians to seek answers on questions that are disputed. So Catholics have been at this for a very long time, and you can see this in many of the contemporary contributions to bioethics that come from Catholic thinkers. Some of my favorites that, you know, I'll always refer people to are people like Patrick Lee, who teaches bioethics at the Franciscan University of Steubenville. Francis Beckwith also has some wonderful insights on this. Chris Kazor is another one at Loyola. I think it's Loyola Marymount here in California. So Kazor, K-A-C-Z-O-R, not Kaxor, Christopher Kazor. He has a great book, The Ethics of Abortion, but he also has wonderful articles on things like the possibility of artificial wombs. Should we place children in artificial wombs if they can or can't survive within a mother's body? So sometimes these bioethical questions start off as hypotheticals, and then they get very real. So a case that I'm dealing with right now and doing a write-up on to talk about, and one I think that's interesting to see what you all think of, is the case of Savior Siblings. So this is a case, if you remember made-for-TV movies put out in 1993, the only thing I remember from 1993 are the Power Rangers, myself, and any made-for-TV movies starring them. But this one, I think it was called For the Love of My Daughter, and it is the story of Anissa Ayala. Anissa was a high school teenager. She noticed she had some swelling around her ankles, didn't know what was causing it. And so she ended up, you know, she kind of hid it for a little while, as teenagers are wont to do. Then it was discovered that she had leukemia and she needed a bone marrow transplant. So she needed someone to donate bone marrow from their body in order to cure her of this leukemia. Now, the problem was her parents were tested. They were not a match. Her older brother was tested. He was not a compatible match. And there were no matches within the public registry of donors, of bone marrow donors. So it looked grim. The odds of getting a match, I think at that time, were about 1 in 20,000 to wait for a future match. So they worried that Anissa would probably pass away before they found a match. So Mary and Andy Ayala, her parents, decided to do something very novel. They decided to conceive a child with the hope that Anissa's new, younger, newborn sister would be a bone marrow match. And so they set about to do this. And this was hard because they only had two children at the time. And Andy Ayala, Anissa's father, had actually had a vasectomy. They weren't planning to have other children. So he went, got the vasectomy reversed. I think Mary was 42 or 45, in her 40s, at the end of her childbearing years. And yet, the reverse vasectomy was successful. And then Mary eventually became pregnant. I believe this happened through regular intercourse. I'm not sure, because whether IVF was involved, this change matters a little bit, as we'll talk about here shortly. But the fact of the matter is they were able to conceive conceive Anissa's sister, who they named Marissa Eve, which is very... poetic. You know, Eve, of course, was taken from one of Adam's ribs, and then Eve was the mother of the living, and so Marissa Eve, their newborn daughter, would now kind of provide life to her older sister by donating a part of her body. So when Marissa was about 14 months old, they discovered that she was a match, and there was only a 1 in 4 chance that a child they would conceive would have been a match. When she was 14 months old, they put her under general anesthetics, and her bone marrow was taken out of her hip, placed into Anissa's body, and Anissa made a full recovery. I think she later married someone else, I think a guy named Brian Espinoza, and Marissa Eve was the flower girl at the wedding. I think that Anissa and Brian since separated, because the most recent news story I found on this was in 2008, and it said at that time that Anissa had a fiancé. So I guess she's not married to the other guy, but Marissa was interviewed in the story and she said that she had no regrets. She even talked about donating eggs for her sister because her sister is now infertile from her cancer treatments. That, of course, is a subject for another time, to donate sperm and eggs and create children in vitro. It's one thing to create a child through in vitro fertilization for a need like this, because oftentimes many children are created and the ones who are not a match are destroyed in the process. And of course, that's a grave evil that can't be tolerated. I noticed an article, I think in 2011, the Episcopal Conference in France condemned the creation of an embryo through IVF for this savior sibling procedure, that the embryo was created in IVF so that it would be implanted, the baby would grow up and donate bone marrow to save a sibling. And that was condemned because it went through the IVF process. But bracketing that off, would this be wrong for Mary and Andy Ayala to engage in the marital act, conceive a child, and then donate that child's bone marrow to her older sister? And my thought on this, I look at it this way. As long as Marissa Eve, the baby who is conceived, is valued as a person with intrinsic dignity, and that she will be valued and loved no matter what happens to her big sister, Anissa, then I don't think that it's immoral what's going on here. As long as she's not treated merely as an organ donor. You might say, well, isn't it wrong, though, for them to conceive her knowing she's going to be used to help her big sister? Well, I don't know if I would use the terms like that, because think about this. Why do people have children? Most of the times when you ask them, why do you want to have a baby? They almost always talk about how the baby is going to help them. Like, oh, I want, she's going to bring a lot of love and joy into our lives, and I'm so excited to be a mother. Most people, when they're asked, why do you want a baby, don't talk about the baby as the first reason. They talk about themselves. Or let's say you already have children. You say, do you want to have another baby? Many of the reasons people will give, you'll say, why do you want to have another baby? Along with to someone to be able to love and cherish, is having another baby, they will help the siblings. I have only one child right now, and I think it would be so great for little Billy to have a little brother or sister to play with. But we wouldn't say that the little brother or sister is being used like, oh, you're just conceiving a child so they can be a playmate for your son or daughter. I think you would see that, no, this child has value in and of themselves, but it's an added ancillary benefit that the child can help their older brother or sister, like by being a companion, someone to also love and cherish them as they grow older together. So that's why Marissa Eves, pediatrician, in the Time magazine article, the original article about this story when it first broke back in 1990, said, he pointed this out. He said, well, why is it wrong to conceive a child so that an older sibling can have a playmate or a companion, but wrong to conceive a child so that an older sibling might be able to live? So once again, I think it's morally acceptable as long as Marissa Eve was not viewed merely as some kind of bone marrow donor. And in the readings that I've looked at on this case, Mary and Andy Ayala even said that they looked forward to having Marissa come into the family, that she would be a source of consolement to them should her older sister pass away, that they looked forward to raising another child if Anissa were to pass away from her leukemia. So I think that when you look at it this way, especially with something like bone marrow donation, it's not... this is not an incredibly risky procedure. The risks are basically associated with being placed under general anesthesia. So I think it'd be better for Marissa Eve to be conceived, go through this procedure, and have an older sister than to never exist in the first place. Now, this doesn't mean that it's always acceptable to conceive a child for the purpose of donating an organ to another sibling. I'm very hesitant if you're talking about the donation of organs that do not naturally regenerate or tissue that does not naturally regenerate. So the idea, for example, of if Marissa Eve were conceived in order to give a kidney to her big sister, Anissa, I'm a bit more hesitant about doing that because that has much more lifelong complications if you only have one kidney instead of two. So that I'm much more hesitant to want to endorse, or something like conceiving Marissa so that her ovaries could be donated to Anissa because she had fertility issues. Once again, I think that you have to look at, in the case of save your siblings who are come into existence through marital intercourse, is this ultimately going to benefit the donor child as much as the recipient child? And in this particular case, the Ayala's, I think it does. But I think in other cases, you have to look at the longer-term effects that are involved, the intentions that are involved. And this shows you once again that bioethics, it's a sticky field. It's, you get a lot of intricate cases that come up. If you would like to learn more about all about bioethics, some advice for you. Number one, search on the internet Father Tad, T-A-D, Paholchek. If you can't spell that, just search Father Tad, T-A-D. And he has a great column called Making Sense of Bioethics. It's printed in PDFs, kind of all over the web. They're great little short two-page write-ups of these kinds of issues. And I think in future podcasts, we'll talk about other issues like these that don't seem clear-cut right at the outset. So Father Tad has some great insights on these. Look up Making Sense of Bioethics of Father Tad. Probably the best book so far on bioethics that's out there is William May's book, Catholic Bioethics and the Gift of Life, one that I highly recommend on this subject for you to check out. And then hopefully in the future, I might write a book on this subject. I was playing around with one recently, but didn't have time to really get into it. I think the working title was something like Faith versus Frankenstein, you know, something like that. Because in bioethics, you get into genetic engineering, gene altering, gets into stuff that, you know, brings us back to the Jurassic Park ethic. When Ian Malcolm, portrayed wonderfully by Jeff Goldblum, tells John Hammond, you were so busy wondering whether you could do it, you didn't stop to think if you should. And so that's, yeah, just because you can do something in science doesn't mean that you should. So those are some resources that I would recommend. Thanks for stopping by the workshop this week. If you enjoyed this episode, please refer it to others. Check out our podcast at iTunes, Google Play. Leave a review. That really helps people to get to know the podcast more and hear more about it. And if you want to hear more bonus episodes this week, including my thoughts on the Kavanaugh controversy, do become a premium subscriber at TrenthornPodcast.com. That's TrenthornPodcast.com. I hope you have a blessed day. Please pray for me. I will say a prayer for all of you listeners as well. And yeah, once again, I hope you guys have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrenthornPodcast.com.